20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy post-draft Sunday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Today's show is presented by Luigi's Pizza. Today is the day, the post-draft pizza. It's finally here. What started it all? What started this beautiful relationship with Luigi's? The picture I took of the post-draft pizza. Today it is the day that we're going to celebrate once again and kind of wrap everything up. And I'm going to unwrap my Luigi's pizza is what you should be doing as well. Go to the store, pick up your Luigi's pizza. I'm going ultra thin crust today. Pop it in the oven. Have the best pizza you've ever tasted in the comfort of your own home. Trust me, it is worth it. It is worth every single second of it. And you're going to want one right after. So make sure when you go to the store to pick one up, you pick up at least two, because you're probably going to want to make a second one right after. A huge shout out to Luigi's for sponsoring us all weekend long. And in all seriousness, it is the best pizza. And now my mouth is watering, waiting for tomorrow to come or today to come, I guess, as you're listening to this, so I can celebrate with that Luigi's pizza. A shout out to our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members as well. Craig Reed, Kyle Baird, Terry Patton, Flavio Masiera, Haley Wolasek, Mark DeMuth, Jonathan Newton, and Ben Rydell. Appreciate you guys signing up for those memberships. If you've liked our draft content all weekend long, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. Those mean a ton. They help the channel a ton. And if you want to as well, check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships if you would like to and are so inclined. I want to start today by saying thank you. This last week has been a whirlwind, from doing live radio shows to doing the live meetups at Titletown and at Hagemeister Park. Shout out to Titletown and Hagemeister for hosting us, by the way. So many of you guys showed up in person. Then we had all the live Q&As, the live draft shows, all of it. You know, whether you're listening on the audio channel and have been keeping tabs on the podcast via the audio channel with all of our great team members that we have over there, whether you're on the YouTube channel and checking out the videos and the live Q&As and everything that we've had going on, the draft parties. I mean, we've had Friday and Saturday had 1,800 people congruently in the live draft parties. I think Thursday was up to 1,600 or 1,700. It's just been an unbelievable few days. And the support that you guys continue to show to make this channel what it is, to support me the way that you guys do, to support our channel the way that you guys do, I cannot thank you enough. It has been a surreal experience. Some of the people that I got to meet, just really, really cool. So thank you so much. It really, truly means the world. I'm even going back to the Timber Rattlers game, the mall event with Cheesehead TV. It's just been a crazy couple weeks in all the best possible ways. And I cannot thank you enough for all of your support and allowing me the platform and opportunity to bring you guys Packers coverage 365 days a year. You are truly the absolute best. Reminder that deep dives are coming this coming week and a half, 2 weeks. We've got 8 of them to get to. We've got 8 presents to unwrap. Tomorrow, we'll do a full draft recap / breakdown with Justice. That'll air on Monday. And then Tuesday will likely be our very first deep dive. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the same. I believe rookie mini camps are going to be maybe actually Friday and Saturday. We'll have to kind of wait and see if that gets confirmed. If so, we'll probably have a couple days in the middle there to review the rookie mini camps and what happened there, then finish up our deep dives, go over some undrafted free agents, and sort of go from there. But these deep dives, I put so much time, effort, and energy into. It is one of my favorite things to do all year long. You're going to get to know these prospects so insanely well. So I highly recommend waiting around over the course of these next couple weeks for these intense deep dives into all of these rookies. It will be a ton of fun, and I promise you I will deliver at my absolute best over these course of the next couple weeks. Shout out, of course, to Green Bay, Wisconsin, Mark Murphy, the Green Bay Packers, the NFL, everyone involved with making that event what it was. Over 600,000 people in attendance over 3 days, which, by the way, would have been more had the weather been more cooperative on Friday. That was the lowest night. It was cold. It was rainy. It was not an ideal night for the draft, unfortunately. I think overall, if you were to tell me ahead of time what the weather would be for those 3 days, I think you would have signed up for this. In Green Bay, in April, you never quite know what you're going to get. And I think this is a more than, you know, acceptable 3-day weather event. Saturday was gorgeous. Tons of people went out on Saturday. But overall, just a unbelievable, you know, job well done by everyone. The event was well run. Everything went off without a hitch. I haven't obviously listened to police scanners or checked the newspapers for any sort of, but it seems like it has been a relatively, you know, safe and friendly environment, just all of it. And then all these moments from, you know, the Matthew Golden moment will live on forever as a unbelievable Packers moment. The crowd erupting and the way that Mark Murphy delivered that, and that many people at the night with Lambeau in the backfield, I still have chills thinking of it. It's in the backdrop, I should say. It's unbelievable. I think I was talking about this with Tyler Brook on the Q&A. I can't imagine a bigger non-game day Packers moment that is that celebrated than that. It was so well done. It will be fondly looked at forever. I hope Green Bay at some point down the road gets another opportunity, because I think, quite frankly, we have earned it. And that's all you wanted to see. And I thought it's just so well done. I'm so proud of the city. I'm so proud of the team. I'm so proud of everyone involved. Just A-plus stuff from everyone. I don't know what more anyone could have possibly wanted from the draft being held in Green Bay. It's as good as it gets, and I think it's just a really unbelievable feather in the cap of the city, of the Packers and organization, and specifically for Mark Murphy, who has this really almost legacy-sealing event as he walks out the door and we start the Ed Policy era moving forward. Ed Policy's got some big shoes to fill now. We'll see what he can do to kind of up the bar even more from what Mark Murphy just put it at by hosting a real legitimate NFL draft in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All right, let's get into all of our news and notes from Saturday. We'll kind of go through some news, and then we'll get to, of course, all of the prospect breakdowns just right after this, I guess. Your reported undrafted free agents: Amar Johnson, a running back from South Dakota State; Jalen White, a running back from Georgia Southern; Julian Fleming, a wide receiver from Penn State; Tyler Cooper, an offensive tackle from Minnesota; J.J. Lippe, a offensive lineman out of Northern Illinois; Brant Banks, a offensive lineman out of Rice; Nazir Stackhouse, a defensive tackle out of Georgia; Jamon Dumas Johnson, a linebacker out of Kentucky; Tyron Herring, a corner out of Delaware; Bugs Brown, a corner out of Florida Atlantic; and Jonathan Baldwin, a safety out of UNLV. Also, Taylor Algersma, that quarterback that we've been talking about out of Canada, did not sign, but he did get an invite to rookie minicamp as a tryout player. I should note that the two players here that I think you want to keep the biggest eye on are Nazir Stackhouse, a big-time nose tackle from Georgia, when I say big-time, I mean a 330-plus-pound defensive tackle from Georgia. Most people had fourth, fifth-round grades on him. Was surprisingly one undrafted. Green Bay now gets two defensive tackles from Georgia, one on day three that we'll talk about here in just a moment. But then Stackhouse being the big nose tackle, that was a really awesome UDFA signing. And then Jamon Dumas Johnson was somebody I had on my big board as a potential draftable player for Green Bay on day three. He goes undrafted. I think those two in particular, you know, almost make this like two more draft picks. I think it really feels like Green Bay now basically had 10 picks in this draft by getting those two. Both of them will have real legitimate opportunities to make this team. I want to watch the tape a little bit more of both of them, but just, you know, sort of the consensus on both were these are very rosterable players, and where Green Bay's at from a nose tackle standpoint and where they are at from a linebacker standpoint, just needing some bodies. Both of these players, I think, are going to have real legitimate opportunities to make this team. So really looking forward to watch a little bit more tape on both of them, but really, it looks like a strong UDFA class. One other thing I will mention is this is the reported UDFA class. Every time of year this year, you get some reports that they tell reporters that, yeah, they signed with the Packers, but it's actually just a tryout, and that's very different. So we'll see if these are all players that actually did get true UDFA contracts. I'm sure some players from Green Bay on the roster right now are probably going to get cut to clear the way for some potential guys that they work out at minicamp, at the rookie minicamp, that they want to sign. And I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of roster maneuvering and gymnastics over the course of the next couple of days to kind of make that happen. But as of right now, that is the reported UDFA signings. I think on the surface, it seems like Green Bay did a really good job this year with those UDFA signings. All right, with that, let's get to the Packers picks from Saturday. Five picks in total. We're going to start with the fourth round. Edge rusher, Baron Sorrell, out of Texas. This was somebody that very much felt like a Packers type that was on a lot of people's radar that I think when you were looking at potential defensive ends slash pass rushers that were still available, Sorrell was one of those guys that was on the top of the list as a real possibility for Green Bay in round four. 6'3", 256, a 9.31 relative athletic score, 45th percentile for weight, 52nd percentile for height, but a 76th percentile or better at everything else. And he did all the testing, all the metrics, all of it. So a really good profile for Baron. He was very much a Packers type. He was 143 on the consensus big board, 115th by Daniel Jeremiah. So again, he had him right in this fourth round range. Had a 72.2 grade from PFF on 651 snaps this past year, a 73.7 grade the year before on 587 snaps, and 64.3 grade on 631 snaps the year before that. This is from Lance Zierlein. Sorrell's measurables and speed won't be eye-catching, which is a weird statement. I'm assuming he wrote this up before the combine because the testing was eye-catching, but he's very consistent and plays with good technique. He can play up or down, but might be targeted as a 3-4 outside backer due to a lack of length. He plays with adequate power at the point and can work around blocks and into the backfield. Sorrell's rush lacks speed and power, but he wins with his hands and has an above average feel for creating entry points with positioning and body turn. He doesn't have high end traits, which again is basically false, but he's productive and reliable. Sorrell could become an average starter in time. Just a little bit of an interesting, like Zierlein's always on top of this stuff. He's fantastic. But the interesting statement here of measurables and speed aren't eye-catching and doesn't have high-end traits. Again, 93rd percentile athlete as a defensive end. Those are pretty special traits overall. But again, my guess is he wrote his scouting report up before maybe the combine and some of the pro day stuff happened, which would be my guess here for Lance Zierlein. Some notes, he had a 28 on the bench press, and it showed when you watch the tape. He's got a great physical upper body that he uses to his advantage. I was hoping for a little bit more of a closing burst to the quarterback. We just talked about how he's a very good athlete. I was hoping to see a little bit more of that closing explosion, and it just was not there, at least not consistently. Plays very, very hard, has really good FBI or football intelligence. He was a team captain, played in every game the past three seasons, so extremely reliable. 49 pressures in 2024. So he was able to find ways to get to the quarterback or at least pressure the quarterback. He is a strong edge defender with great upper body strength, not a super dynamic pass rusher. And he's going to have to learn a little bit more of a nuanced skill set and some counters if he wants to be a more productive pass rusher in the NFL. His fit with Green Bay is going to be as a rotational edge defender. I think he might be a little bit better off on early downs to start, to have him be more of a run stuffer, a run setter, an edge setter, and then kind of continue to work on his pass rush plan over time. But we're going to see how Green Bay uses him. If they view him, you know, I'm sure they view him as a do everything sort of guy. That's what they usually draft. And I think how he fits on this team. But if it were me, I would probably play him a little bit more on early downs and let some of the other guys do a little bit more of the heavy lifting from a pass rush standpoint. All right, that brings us to another edge rusher, Colin Oliver from Oklahoma State. 6'1", 240. Just want you to marinate in that for a second. 6'1", 240. If that doesn't mean anything to you as an edge rusher, he is very, very small. Very small, especially for Green Bay thresholds as a defensive end. Now, there was talk with Colin Oliver or about Colin Oliver as to whether or not he would be an edge rusher or whether he'd be an off-ball linebacker. If you remember Zach Bond from Wisconsin, right? Zach Bond was a pass rusher primarily at Wisconsin and then in the NFL transitioned to an off-ball linebacker and didn't really work out in New Orleans. And then, of course, got to Philly and he became a first-team All-Pro last year. There's been a lot of talk that Colin Oliver would make a similar transition, defensive end in college, go to an off-ball linebacker in the NFL. Milt Hendrickson, who did the sort of interview or the notes after the pick, he noted that they plan on right now putting him at defensive end as a pass rusher. This is a complete 180 from what Green Bay has generally liked to do as a pass rusher. And when Goody said last year of, hey, we don't want specialists, because if all of a sudden your top defensive ends get hurt and you have to bring in your specialist and he can't stop the run, it's a problem. So he's really not done that, not wanted to do that. This is a total change of heart on that philosophy because he is a completely undersized pass rush specialist. You heard that right. A pass rush specialist if he stays at that spot. Was an 8.92 relative athletic score, 17th percentile height, 17th percentile weight, but a 73rd percentile bench press, 98th percentile in the vert, 98th percentile in the broad, and 98th percentile in the 40-yard dash. Not a Packers type at all, not even remotely close to it due to his size or lack thereof at the position. He was 208 on the consensus big board, had an 88.7 grade, but on only 80 snaps this past year, 73.1 grade on 915 snaps the year before that, and a 71.5 grade on 461 snaps prior to that. From Lance Zierlein, the right foot injury that cost Oliver all but two games in 2024 could create unsure evaluations. He's a natural edge rusher with outstanding fluidity and movement talent, but lacks the size or length to project there as a three-down player. As an off-ball linebacker in 2023, he flashed the ability to handle the position, but he clearly lacked the seasoning and recognition that can only come with more reps. No matter the alignment, he needs to play with better composure and positioning to handle run reps on his terms and make more tackles. He projects as a designated pass rusher and developmental off-ball linebacker with the ability to jump into a special teams role. My notes here, is he an edge or is he a linebacker? It seems like they're going to play him at edge to begin with. He is an actual, true pass rush specialist with unbelievable speed. It is really, really fun. On PFF, the five comps that were most like Colin Oliver, Hassan Reddick, Jannard Avery, Mo Kamara, Shaka Toney, and Nolan Smith. Just a who's who lately of undersized pass rushers, all of which have had, you know, moments in the NFL, or at least, you know, there's a lot of upside for a couple of those guys too, like Mo Kamara. But this is like a undersized defensive end, convention here with those names. But he fits very much within those same sort of comps, and hopefully he has a little bit more Hassan Reddick in him than maybe some of the other ones. Obviously, Nolan Smith had a really nice year last year as well. While he had the 8.92 relative athletic score as a defensive end, he had a 9.88 relative athletic score if you move him to linebacker. So that's when people are thinking it like, hey, he could be a great linebacker. You know, from an athleticism standpoint, it's even more impressive at linebacker than what it is at defensive end. Projects as a key special teams player, although only played 112 snaps in his college career. He's fluid and fast, is a twist and stunt demon. If you overset to protect in just like the speed rush, he will bull rush you. He will get under your pads and throw you back. There's a great play I posted on Twitter where the offensive tackle is thinking speed rush. He bull rushes him, gets off of him, gets to the quarterback. It's a really, really fun play. He's the aggressor. He's coming off mostly a lost season due to injury. Has the height weight issue, which is going to limit him and what he can actually do on the field. You know, if you're going to look at him for any sort of run defense, he'd have to move to off-ball linebacker. He's not going to be able to hold up as an edge rusher. He has an attacking mindset. And this past year, he only got to rush the passer 46 times because of the foot injury. 46 pass rush attempts. In those 46, he had 15 pressures, basically getting there one out of every three times. It's an unbelievable rate. Had a 34.8% win rate, a 32.6% pressure rate, and a 90.8 PFF grade as a pass rusher. It's very small sample size, but just absurd, absurd numbers. And then one of the things he really needs to work on is his tackling. His fit in Green Bay is a true legitimate toy for both Jeff Hafley and Rich Bisaccia. Brad Gutekunst put a nice toy under both of their trees they're going to have to share, but for Hafley, he gets a true undersized dedicated pass rusher that might also have some off-ball linebacker ability. And for Rich Bisaccia, he gets a player that projects as a very, very good special teams player. All right, next up, defensive lineman Warren Brinson out of Georgia, 6'5", 315, a 9.10 relative athletic score, had a 49th percentile 10-yard split and no three cone, but overall, outside of those two, tested really, really well overall. Definitely feels like a Packers type, was 254 on the consensus big board, had a 73.9 PFF grade on 405 snaps this past year, a 79.2 grade the year before that, and a 72.3 grade the year before that. From Lance Zierlein, Brinson is the best version of himself when he's allowed to get up the field and make things happen. He gets upfield with purpose and pad level. He can get skinny, swim and rip his way into gaps to disturb the run design and compromise the quarterback's pocket. He has adequate strength at the point, but won't control blockers or beat back double teams at a high enough rate when runs come downhill at him. Brinson's rush talent and disruptive qualities should fit one-gapping defenses looking for a rotational piece to create chaos inside. I love that. Any type of chaos creator is always good with me. Some notes here. Really good size, 6'5", 315. He's a solid run defender, but has more mobility than a traditional run defender. So you could argue he's a little bit of a tweener, where he's almost plays a little bit more like a three technique, but is built almost a little bit more like a nose tackle. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. I think you're getting actually the best of both worlds, and it does feel like he's going to fit this Jeff Hafley defense incredibly well as a gap penetrating defensive tackle. He will have some hot and cold stretches. He's not a traditional block eating defensive tackle or nose tackle. He's not enough of a pass rusher to be a real true three technique. So he's kind of this in-between tweener that you're not exactly sure what he's going to be, but he's good at a little bit of everything. So that's what Green Bay is going to have to kind of figure out. Stays relatively low for his size. He's a modern NFL run defender, and the fact that he can hold up against the run, but he's got a little bit of juice too. He's not just this, you know, 340-pound guy that can't move very well. He can move for his size, plus stop the run. Actually liked him best lined up over center, and not a ton of flash from Brinson, but a lot of substance is what's really going to set him apart when you get to know him a little bit better. His fit with Green Bay is as a rotational defensive lineman that should get real snaps and every real opportunity to not only make this team, but like I said, get snaps throughout the course of the season. All right, that brings us to cornerback Micah Robinson out of Tulane, 5'11", 183. He was a top 30 visit. He had a 6.77 relative athletic score with a 4.38 40-yard dash, did only have an 8th percentile short shuttle, and was only 31st percentile in weight. This would generally not be a total Packers type, but they clearly liked something when they met with him on a top 30 visit. He was Dane Brugler's 50th graded cornerback, and he did not have a scouting report for him. Had an 84.3 PFF grade on 546 snaps this past season. But prior to that, had a 69.4 grade on 472 snaps and a 73.5 grade on 600 snaps. Both of those seasons, he was playing with Furman. Lance Zierlein did not have a scouting report. This is a guy that, as I mentioned, he wasn't on the consensus big board. They have like 800 players on there. He was not listed. So this is somebody that was way sort of outside of the purview of everyone. Again, he was Dane Brugler's 50th graded cornerback and the first one that did not have a scouting report. I luckily did have the scouting report that I did because he was a top 30 visit. Remember, we went through all the top 30 visits. He's an outside corner, good backpedal and transition forward. He will gamble rather than making the correct or safe play and gets grabby at the catch point. I like how he attacks the ball at its highest point. His feet get stuck in mud and the lack of change of direction really shows on tape. He can jump routes with his speed. You got to get him to play a little bit safer and not gamble as much. Fantastic effort to catch an opponent on the entire opposite side of the field and get him right before the goal line. And then to me, what I said prior to the draft is that he would be a really, really good UDFA signing if you could get him there. He ends up not being a UDFA signing. Green Bay gets a jump on him, so nobody else could sign him in UDFA, but as a UDFA. But you know, seventh round pick here is totally fine. It's not this crazy selection. And I really actually, of all the random, you know, sort of back of the 300 prospects guys that they brought in for top 30 visits, Robinson was legitimately one of my favorites. So I'm really excited that they were able to get him. Again, I thought maybe as a UDFA, but if they wanted to make sure they got him, make sure you get him and spend a seventh round pick on him. And that's exactly what they did. His fit is going to be as a number 6 developmental corner. He's going to battle for that spot with some potential special teams value to begin with. And that's where he's going to probably have to make his name. Last but not least, offensive guard John Williams out of Cincinnati, 6'4", 322, 9.07 relative athletic score. Definitely a Packers type at guard. Was 279th on the consensus big board. Had a 76.8 PFF grade on 826 snaps in 2024 and a 69.9 grade on 820 snaps in 2023. From Lance Zierlein, Williams, a college tackle, has the body type of a guard, which is where he might be asked to move as a pro. They did announce him as a guard. He's tight-hipped, leading to waist bending, but he has adequate quickness in the early stages of the block. He lacks decisiveness and body control to make consistent use of early advantages. He also needs to get stronger and more aggressive as a run blocker. He's long in pass pro with adequate footwork. When projected to guard, But it remains to be seen if he can survive against pro bull rushers. All right, that's the notes from Lance Zierlein. My notes, looks the part, good, not great movement skills. This is all, again, prior to the draft a couple weeks ago when we did our top 30 visit breakdown. So looks the part, good, not great movement skills, needs to do a better job of maintaining blocks, good ability to recover if and when he gets beat, like his overall demeanor. I think there's some upside here as a late round pick, good balance, good effort, not too out of control, can get beat with speed off the edge, extremely rough performance in the Shrine game, largest hands at the combine, which is always a plus, and then projects as a zone blocking, more pass protecting offensive lineman. Although I think that changes a little bit as he moves inside the guard, doesn't give you a ton as a run blocker. He's going to have to put on some bulk. He's going to have to be a little bit more of a mover if he wants to be, I think, somebody that can legitimately play on the interior of the offensive line. At a late rounder, undrafted free agent grade that would compete for a 9th or 10th spot on the offensive line, likely practice squad player with some developmental upside. Again, that was my notes prior to the draft. All right, what they did in this draft? Well, they took two wide receivers, two edge rushers, two offensive linemen, a defensive lineman, and a cornerback. That is your final position count. Again, one more time, two wide receivers, two offensive linemen, two edge rushers, a defensive lineman, and a corner. That draft class, Matthew Golden, Anthony Belton, Savion Williams, Baron Sorrell, Colin Oliver, Warren Brinson, Micah Robinson, and John Williams. As far as what's next for Green Bay now that the draft is over, the Jaire Alexander conversation is now going to heat up. Didn't trade him before the draft, didn't trade him during the draft, which is unlikely because of the physical situation. Where do you go from here? There was a little bit of a note that he is participating in the voluntary, virtual offseason program. That's a solid sign, I guess, right? But then when Goody was asked about it, basically, was noncommittal and saying once again, no change here, and that we're working through things and that he's on the roster right now. Just very GM speak sort of stuff. I still, as I mentioned on Twitter, don't think he's going to be back. I get that people want him back. There's a lot of passion about that. They did not attack draft, corner in the draft until late 7th round. So I can understand the sentiment. If you read between the lines here with Goody, I think it's crystal clear that they're doing everything they can to try to move on. They just haven't found the right scenario or situation yet. And there's no ticking time bomb until the first week of the regular season when his contract would be guaranteed at that point. So very interesting. Again, the one thing I'll say here just really quick, I don't even want to talk about this anymore, really, if I'm being honest, but if Goody, there's so many things that Goody could say in this situation of clearly if it was just going to be back, he would say, yep, he's going to be back. Why are you asking me these questions about Jaire, right? Of course he's going to be back. He did not do that. If you're unsure, or if you're working through it with the intention to bring him back, you would probably say something to the effect of, we really like Ja. We're working on something where he can come back in 2025. We really think that he's one of the premier corners in this league. We're just trying to figure out, and whatever you want to say, but there's a billion different GM ways, PR ways to say what they're doing while they're trying to work through a negotiation or whatever it might be. This is not that. He's been crystal clear. He's been trying to shop him, that he's on the roster for now. I just don't see a world where it comes back, but I will say once again, crazier things have happened. And if it happens, I'm not against it. I'm just going to be really hoping that he can play the requisite amount of games that are needed. Other than that, obviously the next step is cornerback. And what I mean there is you got to figure out the Jaire situation, but you need some bodies in that room to come and compete for that number three, number four spot on the outside. I'm not sure you have that player right now. And especially if Jaire is gone, which we're expecting, that's going to make it really, really tough. Of where you kind of go for depth. There's not much on the free agent market. Maybe they can seek out some trades, but corner is definitely going to be a bit of an issue at the moment. Last but not least, actually, that's not true. We've got a couple things here, but winners and losers. Winner to me is Jordan Love. You get him Matthew Golden, you get him Savion Williams, you get him Belton as a potential pass and run blocker down the road. I think Jordan Love is a huge winner here. I'll also say Sean Clifford was a bit of a winner because we talked about the potential to go out and grab another quarterback. They didn't. So as of right now, he still remains as sort of the default number three quarterback. Emmanuel Wilson and Chris Brooks. This is a very deep running back draft. You could have easily seen a world in which best player at the board at some point was a running back, and they didn't take one, which is a very good sign if you are Chris Brooks or Emmanuel Wilson that they'll have the opportunity to make the team again in 2025. Loser is Romeo Doubs. just because of all the receivers that we're taking. He's going to be a free agent. He was already unhappy last year with his sort of playing time, and it looks like it could potentially even get worse. Loser is Matthew Golden, number 22. Number 22, I don't care at all. It's going to be fine. I'm excited for him to wear number 22, but I know a lot of fans were upset that he's going to potentially, or that he is going to be wearing number 22. And clearly for that, you have to put him on the loser side of things. Winners, Luke Musgrave, Ben Sims, and John Fitzpatrick. No tight ends added. Losers, Rashid Walker and Sean Ryan. Offensive linemen added that could easily take their spots next year, or at least in the case of Belton, you know, he could take one of their spots. And then, of course, the other one is Jordan Morgan, their first-round pick from a season ago. Losers, Aaron Mosby, Brenton Cox, and Kingsley Nigbari. You added two pass rushers or two edge defenders. Might only be room for one of those guys. By the way, if it's one that has to get cut, Kingsley Nigbari might be the one that it would be potentially looking on the way out. You do have some savings because he got that raise as a performance escalator. That's going to be one that's very interesting. Winners, Tyron Hopper and Christian Welch. No real linebackers added in the draft. Micah Robinson, Kalen King, and Kamal Haddon were winners. They're all going to have seemingly legitimate opportunities to make this team. Omar Brown was a winner. He's got like five safeties in front of him, but the last thing he needed was another safety to compete against. So I think that's a win for him. Matt Whalen and Matt Orzek, or sorry, Daniel Whalen and Matt Orzek were both, I think, winners because there's no competition brought in. Matt LaFleur, I think, was a winner. He got a lot of pieces on offense. And then Jeff Hafley might be a little bit of a loser here. I'm sure he probably would have wanted a little bit more corner, maybe a little bit more pass rush. It just didn't work out that way. But I think Matt LaFleur is overall very happy on his side of the ball that they got some serious weapons on days one and two of the draft. My final thoughts here, A-plus by the Green Bay Packers when it comes to hosting the draft. A-plus. Couldn't ask for anything more. I would say from a draft class standpoint, this is a good but not super sexy draft class with some really unique players. I think it's just another reminder too that Green Bay drafts unicorns. Golden, Belton, Savion Williams, Oliver, these are very unique players. They're not players that you find out there very often. And what they're able to bring to the table, I think is very, very interesting. And I think that's what's really going to make this class. But Green Bay continues to draft players that are very unique movers, speedsters, whatever you want to look at it as. You got the dancing bear mentality. You've got some real superpowers. Even Micah Robinson, a 4.3 40 guy, they look for those really special traits. And once again, they did a great job of identifying those traits. We'll see if it translates into great players. And then last but not least, just remember to forget everything that you know. As much as it is fun to kind of get into the draft and know these prospects, now it's time to just let them be prospects, let them start their journey as an NFL player. And hopefully they can be everything that we want them to be and more. But now is just the beginning of the journey for all these rookies and these new Green Bay Packers. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Habish, Habish, and Rotier. Reminder that serious injuries need serious representation. And that's exactly what you get with Habish, Habish, and Rotier. They've recovered millions for clients across the state of Wisconsin because to them, getting you the compensation you deserve is not just a game, it is a commitment. When you call Habish, you're going to talk to a lawyer directly. Their number is 800-242-2874 or 800-2-HABISH. You can find them online at habish.com. Habish, Habish, and Rotier, national reputation, hometown service. Visit habish.com for more information or call 800-2-HABISH. Last but not least, a shout out to everyone at Packaday, everyone on the audio side for bringing A-plus stuff every single day. Ross Uglum for all the daily draft stuff. Andrew and Kyle for the on the clock series. Owen Reese and Rob Rieger for coming back during draft season. It has been an unbelievable draft season. We still got more for you as we break down this draft class over the course of the next couple of weeks. Again, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. Those help the channel a ton. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Huang, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, Jake Kohner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle-Sinkle, Jen Wright, Ian Houle, and Matt Geiger. I'll see you guys all tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.